Hey, welcome to the Bead House. Jeff here.
Chris here. Been a minute.
It has
been a whole week, man.
It has.
Well, the weather's been odd recently. Mm-hmm. Notice that? I mean, cold, then hot, then cold, and now it's hot.
Yeah, it really can't make up its mind. Every morning, my wife is like, oh, it's so cold out. No, honey, it's in the 60s. I know.
But then later in the 80s.
Bear in mind, my wife will wear a long sleeve sweater to work even in the dead of summer. So, yeah, no.
I think I'd melt.
Yeah, and I'm sure I would be like double or triple applying deodorant through the day. Just the stank off, all sweaty. But that's me.
Carry a portable shower. All right. Well, everybody, welcome back to our show. We have a couple things we'd like to say. First, I want to thank all our subscribers out there and our listeners. Thank you so much for coming and visiting with us. Love having you. Hope you're getting some good out of it. I'm seeing more comments come in on the website. Mm-hmm. It's nice. Please bring them in. We had one guy comment recently. He wanted to ask about how to properly burp. Mm-hmm. And I said, we swirl. We don't make overcomplicate this. I've seen people use vacuums and all that, but I just made it easy.
Here's the thing, and this is a good question. I think it's a good point to bring up that there are people that use vacuums, and you can use a vacuum depending on when you want to degas. When you're in primary, you want to do the swirl or get your little stir stick in there and do its thing that way. What you don't want to do is vacuum. Can you guess why?
I don't know why.
Well, in when we want to use the vacuum, like secondary right before bottling, we're trying to get rid of any dissolved carbon dioxide in the bottle just to kind of clarify and make it that much better. Kind of the same idea as filtering, except this is just dissolved.
But will it cause it to fizz and you'll suck out some of the liquid if you do it primary?
Nope. Okay. Carbon dioxide is not the only gas in your mead in primary. If you do a vacuum on the first day after you notice airlock activity, mm-hmm. not only are you pulling out the carbon dioxide, you're also pulling out oxygen.
It needs the oxygen.
Then that first week, the oxygen is a good thing for the yeast.
Now I can put that together now. That's nice.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, anyway, so thank you for listening. Come and join us. I'm glad we got that one because I would have made a mistake on it at some point if you did not say that. I appreciate that.
It's one of those things that I tried that at one point when I was doing it primary and like, oh, vacuum pump I just made. Why did my mead crap out so soon?
Well, that helps me. Mm-hmm. And the other person we got to thank is Box and Barleycorn.
Absolutely.
They have been staunch supporters for us from day one since I started.
Mm-hmm. And they approached us to sponsor.
They came to us and said, hey, you want to sponsor? I'm sitting here, Jeff. So Jake and the guys there are just awesome. If you need it, they got it for anything from fermentation oriented.
Right. Whether it's advice or equipment or supplies or ingredients. I mean, if they don't have it, I'm pretty sure they have the wherewithal to get it.
Yeah. And soon. And you don't have to do the research. They know where to get it.
Right.
They have the resources.
You know, I've been going down some rabbit holes for future episodes, and there are some things I'm pretty sure they may not have because they're just so niche and weird. But I'm still willing to bet that, you know, maybe they could get it in small quantities. Maybe if enough people were asking for it, they could make it happen. I'm relatively certain.
Yeah, I have very little doubt of that.
Yeah.
But Jake and the guys are great. If you stop by, they'll be glad to share a bit with you. Mm-hmm. And if you go online to make your order, use our code MHP10.
That's 6 weeks in a row.
Just killing it here. And you see me going through the in my head every time.
Yeah, reach out to them for any of your homebrew needs. I mean, we love to support small businesses.
Yeah, we really do.
Local businesses. This is in a world that is becoming more and more clogged with mega corporations buying and running everything. I'm more than happy to say, hey, you know, these guys in town, they've been here for a long time. They know their stuff. And it's the kind of customer like support and connection
that you really need.
Get.
In this kind of world we live in for mead, you need it.
Yeah.
But I also want to bring up, so since we're getting more and more response from online and such, mm-hmm. we are now on several platforms. We don't have Spotify yet. We're still working on Spotify.
Spotify's the white whale that I'm chasing.
Yeah, well, go for it, Ahab. Anyway, we are on Amazon, Apple, Pocket Cast, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Deezer, Podcast Addict, Player FM, Podchaser, CastBox, Good Pods, and Podcast Index. Mm-hmm. So if you have any of those, we're there, man. Just look us up, the Meat House, and keep up with us. Join us on our journey.
Yeah, we are trying to make it as easy as possible for you guys to get your content week after week. And if you have the ability to, you know, like or subscribe or rate or review, do you mind? The more you guys share and you know, interact with us, that engagement that internet creators are always looking for.
Yeah, is so important. And Jeff's the smart guy in the room here. He has more knowledge about things to talk about than I do. I'm struggling at this point because we've said so much and gone so much detail. I'm saying, Jeff, help. But, you know, so you guys can help too. I mean, we're still going strong. We're not going to quit for any reason. But
yeah, is there a topic you want to hear us talk about that we haven't yet? Is there a topic that we talked about where we missed some major facet that you want addressed? I mean, it doesn't have to take a whole episode. We can, you know, nail down, you know, two or three short topics in one episode. And
just like that degassing we just went over, it was just a short memo on that came up on our website, and
yeah,
got it.
You know, this is the internet and the information we're putting out there, that's for everybody.
Yeah.
And so if you have information that we missed that you think would be useful for other people to have, please
let us know. All right, Jeff, I'm excited about today because I finally got my first bulk batch of mead done recently, and nice. I bottled this last week.
Nice.
It's my wild plum that I've been talking about for weeks.
And I've been looking forward to for basically as soon as you told me, hey, I got a line on some wild plums.
Yeah, and that was just over a year ago. And I made it within a week of that time, so it's been in the bucket sealed for a year.
Nice.
It's a bulk age.
Nice.
So here we go. I think of it as a dark amber color. I think Jeff may have a different opinion about that.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say, actually. Dark amber, it looks honey colored. Very clear.
This ended up being a 15%.
And there is a little bit of booze on the nose. There's a little bit of that. It's stone fruit, so it's not a powerful smell by any stretch, but there's definitely a fruity note to it.
And this was 10 pounds of wild plum. Now, I'm told by the lady who got me from Pink Pony Farms, Jess told me that she may pick these just a touch early.
Okay.
So they tend to be tart at that point. Right. So we may have a tart meat here.
Okay. So the tart is not necessarily bad. Yeah. Now, you said 10 pounds went into your batch. How big was your batch? 5, 7?
7 pounds.
7? Okay. So not quite 2 pounds per gallon.
Yeah, but just we'll under. See.
A little tart.
A little tart. But not overwhelmingly.
Yeah, no, it's nice. Would I pick this flavor out as a plum flavor? It almost tastes a little like a strong pear flavor to me, more than a plum.
Really?
But
I can see where you're getting that, but I wouldn't pick pear out of it because it's just too strong of that flavor.
Right, and I think the tartness does kind of contradict that. Is not something I would really call pear.
And I made this a light semi-sweet. So it's not heavily sweet as like a lot of them I do.
Right, right. And I think that's the benefit, especially for a fruit like plums. You know, most stone fruit really are a fairly light, you know, flavor, light body. So a lighter bodied mead is kind of the way to go with those. I mean,
and this is actually the one you told me to add the peptic enzyme to at the in secondary, which obviously cleared it up beautifully.
Yeah. No. If you're having problems getting clarity and you've tried a little peptic enzyme, bear in mind the directions are a general rule. And I have had batches that were cloudy as all get out and didn't respond well to much of anything, but put in an extra dose of peptic, and boom, it's clear.
It did a beautiful job of it right there. So what do you think?
It is nice. It's very... Yeah, it's a good balance between the tart and sweet. There's not a lot of tannin to it, but body-wise, it's fairly light, so I'm not looking for a lot of tannin.
And, I never took this out of the bucket after filtering to secondary. I filtered it, sweetened it, left it from that point on, and this is what I got.
Depending on how much of a yeast detritus, like, cake you got at the bottom after that moved to secondary, that could be a little bit problematic, because if you get a lot of stuff settling in there and you're leaving it for a very long time, you can get that kind of the surly aging where it gets some weird bitterness. But I think you got most of the yeast detritus out, or the yeast didn't really get to the point where it was consuming itself in secondary.
But when I filtered it out, when I got the the Petkins, I did his job to clear it up. Mm-hmm. I filtered a vast majority off the top, but then I filtered the rest.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, but I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, no. It's, I would not mind a little bit more fruit-forward presentation. Just the fruity part, as opposed to the tartness. Of course, using ingredients as we get them, the thing is, if you put more fruit into it, you probably get more tart out of it. So,
but I did learn from Jess at Pink Pony. She had this year's wild plum she's getting mm-hmm. are being picked ripe. Nice. So it should be sweeter.
Nice.
So I may see about getting another round for it.
That based on round one, I think round two will be nice.
Yeah. But here we go. Now, today we're going to talk about, what was that one? It was a...
Gruet.
Gruet. That, yeah, I couldn't remember the word.
So, and yeah, no, let's... I think the what is it is a great place to start. What is gruet? Gruet is, in this part, for the beginning part, we're basically talking about something in the beer world more than the mead world. Gruet is the idea of using herbs or spices or what have you, other than hops, to make a bittering component to beer. And I think historically, this is the way they did it for a very long time. The idea of using hops in beer, you know, the hops in a lot of these older gruet recipes was an ingredient that went into them. I think people just kind of latched onto hops and kept at it as the preferred medium, methodology, whatever term you want to use there. I'm a little bit, scattershot. I've been thinking about too many other things that have been big words. But
the big word thing, yeah, got it.
Yeah, no. So I think historically this was the way that people made beer and made it taste nice, was just to balance the inherent sweetness of the grain with some of these herbs. And I think if you recall months and months ago when we were talking about historical meads and some of the ingredients that go into historical meads, mm-hmm. a lot of the ingredients we're going to talk about here, they're going to sound familiar, because I think the idea of mixing, balancing something sweet with something herbaceous or something a little bit bittering applies to a mead as well, you know, just for a enhancing the enjoyment of the drinking, enhancing the flavor, and, you know, the idea of like perfect balance between tart and sweet and tannin. That probably wasn't as like a strive for thing in as it is in like modern brewing, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the idea was still there that, you know, if we add this, it'll tone down the sweetness, or it'll balance the sweetness with another flavor. It'll make it more interesting. It'll make it taste nice. And I'm sure that a lot of this was just, you know, stuff that they had growing around them, or stuff that they had cultivated growing in their area. So in modern times, we have a lot more options because we have things like greenhouses and, you know, worldwide shipping and things like that. So,
So gruet is just something other than hops. So if we made a beer with a gruet instead of hops, I can have that.
Yes,
mm-hmm. That sounds okay. This is something I can get behind.
Well, and this is one of a few different topics that it's an interesting thing for us to talk about, especially for you, because yeah, no, Chris has a sensitivity to hops mm-hmm. that, you know, at least it makes you a cheap date.
Yeah, it makes me a really cheap date, and it makes it funny as all get out.
It's just kind of unfortunate for Chris to be the one like experiencing that. That process of being a cheap date and getting stupid drunk off half a beer.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing, I'll be honest.
Embarrassing.
I mean, I can go through 8 hard ciders with less effect than half a beer because of hops.
Woof.
Yeah. I mean, it's staggeringly bad.
And generally speaking, hard ciders are a little more on the alcoholic side than a beer, too. You know, depending on where you're getting it, beers are usually in that 3-5%. And most of the hard ciders I get are in the 5-6%. So not a great deal more alcoholic, but still.
It's a jump.
Yeah, it's like a, 18-1 count.
Yeah.
You're getting shit-faced on.
It's not fair. It's what it says. It's not fair. It
really isn't. So that's like one reason this is interesting for us. Another reason we're finding this interesting, like I talked about before, is just the historical aspect of it, because I think a lot of people get into mead making from a desire to connect with their background or their heritage. And a number of people say, my I come from a Viking family, and I kind of I Chuck at that. And yeah, I know. I come from a family of accountants.
Yeah.
Because it's a job. It's not a
it doesn't count.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
But I understand that there are a lot of people that want that connection to their roots or just to the historical side of that, to the interest of this this beverage, because it is one of those things that, to a large part, you know, where, you know, beer and wine and even to a lesser extent cider have really continued into the modern day. Mead has kind of fallen by the wayside and is getting rediscovered, and that's a kind of attractive thing for a lot of our listeners. So this historical way of approaching beer and how that applies to mead is also, I think, of a really valuable, interesting kind of, you know, angle to examine this at.
I like this aspect that, okay, I've had beers. I've tried several kinds of beers.
Mm-hmm.
They taste, quote, like a beer, unquote. I mean, there are different flavors and textures and, yes, and intensities.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't fool me with that. You know, I don't know if it's the hops or what, but it's a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the aspect you can add more to it to try to get more flavor out of it.
Right. Well, and I think that's another thing that we'll kind of hint on as we go here, that, again, there are a number of different things that people used in historical times for this purpose, but we have an entire world of fruit and spices and, you know, herbs and things like that, and we have the ability to get those in a relatively fresh and, you know, relatively, like, I don't want to say pungent, but like an aromatic of full state that we can use relatively quickly. So there are so many more options these days than what, you know, historically the old mead maker in 1500s had growing in his backyard.
Yeah. Because, you know, like many things of the time, you use what was around you.
Mm-hmm.
And this, we have an advantage there. What's around us is almost anything you can get shipped here.
Exactly. Or you can grow in a greenhouse, right?
I know there's a place in Wisconsin, they have a greenhouse that has coconuts, limes, bananas, mm-hmm. and sure, why not? You know, even in winter months.
Sure. Yeah. No, and we can do microclimates here where you can like put a plant in a little like box or a little room with a grow light and humidity to try and mimic its natural conditions if they're not conducive to whatever place you're in.
Mm-hmm.
You've got so many options for growing stuff here, and even in the relatively like nearby area, let alone getting, you know, long pepper shipped in from Suriname or wherever the hell it grows from. It's wild the amount of stuff we have access to.
I have long pepper at home. I'm just saying, you said that I have that at home. Anyway, so is a Gruet at core a beer?
The way that we're talking about for now, yes. But as we get a little further into this, we'll talk about, you know, how we can take these ideas and merge them with mead.
Right.
And, you know, we just talked about a Christmas braget last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can absolutely make a Gruet braget in this fashion, too.
Nice.
So it's just a matter of finding, you know, herbs and grains and things like that that play nicely with the honey you want to use. So,
well, let's begin. What's the first step in this?
So let's talk about some of the common ingredients you see in Gruet recipes,
okay,
the historical or modern, really.
Recipe has been broken, so it hasn't really changed much.
Plenty of people want to go back to what's worked before as a start. And, mm-hmm. you know, why not?
Why not?
If it worked before, it will continue to work in modern times.
Yeah.
One of the ones I see time and time and time again, mugwort. It's an herb, little spice. It's a bittering plant.
Okay.
It is not nearly as potent a bittering agent as hops are, but it's still kind of herbaceous. The tasting notes from it, I forget. Another one I see very commonly, though, is yarrow. And it's in that same...
I know yarrow.
Yeah, no. Mugwort, yarrow, these are things that grow in any random, like, spice garden
yeah.
kind of stuff. They are borderline weeds, really, because they survive really well.
Agreed.
Another popular one is heather. Heather is a little bit more of a challenging flavor for some people.
Well, heather is so temporarily, you know, a little bit of heather goes a long way.
It really does. Mm-hmm. And it can be a little off-putting of a flavor depending on the context. And I've had some heather honey that was a little off-putting as well.
Mm-hmm. I think you shared that with me at one point. It was like,
you're right. I would I would be challenged to figure out what flavors would go well with it. But in that same, a little bit of heather can be an interesting thing. A lot of bit of heather can be
Too much of a thing.
right, like mint or rose, really. It's just like
Or almost any of those strong herbal flavors, you know.
exactly. And I think a lot of these are going to be strong herbal flavors.
Because my son said something that made me shudder last week. Hey, Dad, if we get actual wasabi, we can make a wasabi mead. And I'm sitting here, you can show yourself out. He told me later he was just kidding, which I'm glad because I like wasabi, don't get me wrong. No.
I like a little dab once in a while to help clear my palate. I don't want to drink an 8 ounce glass of it. Thank you.
Nope.
Might as well just use some of that prepared horseradish sauce you get with roast beef and just slather that into a meat and call it. Oh.
I call it horrible.
Yeah. So another herb that's, again, it's in these same families. Horehound is another. It's you can get it in your garden center probably
Yeah,
if
I've
you grow
grown
herb.
around. Yeah.
Let's see. Sweet Gale is one that I've heard of. I've not really tasted much of. And
I've heard again, heard of it, not never had it.
right. And then the last one I found a lot of was ground ivy.
Yeah, I can see that. Ivy
And
was pretty prevalent in old recipes,
well,
though.
not ivy like growing up a wall ivy. Ground ivy is actually a member of the mint family.
Really? I didn't know that.
And it, well, like mint or like ivy, it is an intrusive and easily self-propagating plant.
So maybe that's the ivy they were talking about in those recipes I read. I
Possibly.
haven't tried it, but it could be.
Well, and right, this has so many different names because it's such a pest to, home gardeners
Oh, yeah.
that whatever locale it is, widow such and such calls it this and that. And so there, if you look up information about this, there's literally like a dozen different like borderline slur names for this plant. But it's in that mint family, probably not as minty as like a spearmint or another kind of like regular mint that we would get for mint purposes, but it has that strong minty flavor
Okay.
and is very prolific, shall we say.
I'm sorry, in my head right now, I'm sitting here. That's that freaking mint. I can't get rid of it. That's almost any mint, I'll be honest.
It really is. There's I we had a little side garden in the house I was growing up in, and my mom planted some without realizing how prolific it would get, and the entire garden was mint in a year. It just it goes. It goes, it goes, it goes. So anyway, those are the most common ones I heard of and saw in like more historical recipes. But I
Knowledge or substitute for hops.
Right. The idea is that we're using this as a bittering agent to replace the hops. But
Okay.
obviously, they're not going to, with hops, you get a lot of other flavors, some of them floral or like a little bit more like a, what do I want to say, like a, especially modern like breeds or types of hops. You'll get some citrusy notes to it that are interesting.
Okay.
You'll get some woodsy notes or some kind of like resinous notes, especially if you're getting some of like the Oregon and Washington region, like hop varieties that are really popular in American IPAs. There's a lot of different flavor notes coming into those these days, but in the same token, you're getting other flavors with these herbs as well, other than the bitterness. And so, expect some woodiness and or some herbaceousness and the degrees of herbaceousness and flavor. If you put heather into a braggot or a gruet beer, expect something similar to a heather, even if you've been boiling it for a long, long time and you're getting most of the bitter compounds bittered in there. Now, this idea of gruets kind of had a little renaissance apparently in the 90s, and going forward when a lot of microbreweries started popping out across the country, and a number of the brewers there decided, hey, this idea of using like this ancient process for herbs and spices and things like that sounds interesting and fun. So I did a little like I did some searching for like the different kinds of gruets that modern brewers have used and made, and the ingredients going into there. And I have a laundry list for you of other stuff that's gone into gruets. And some of this is going to sound familiar, and some of this is going to sound surprising. And I think a number of these are going to be interesting in concept, at least, if not in practice. So, as far as the less common ingredients for gruet or more modern takes on gruet, I've seen people using ginger.
I can see that. Yeah.
Spice or spruce tips.
Yeah, I've heard of spruce beer. Why not?
Right, yeah. Just use it as a bittering compound instead of more of a dry hop kind of a thing. One I know you'll find familiar, bergamot.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorites.
And again, it's got that nice herbaceous note to it that, if so little survives the bittering
Yeah.
part of this, I think that'd be just great.
That'd be great, yeah.
Bog myrtle is one I've heard of.
Bog
Again,
myrtle.
I've not.
I've grown bog myrtle and I found nothing to use it with.
Apparently, you need to make some gruit.
Apparently, I mean to make gruit. I mean, I made it and I tried it in several herb dishes I tried to make and I threw every one of them out. They were horrible. So I guess I just need to make them do a gruit.
Yeah, apparently so. One that I like, I tried growing and it went kind of well, kind of fizzled out on me. Sweet Woodruff.
Haven't heard of that one.
It is a it's a continental European herb. The I cannot remember the style of beer, but there's a German style of beer that is kind of a sour. And at a brewery in Omaha, while we were there with some friends and visiting, going to the zoo and stuff like that, I stopped in because I was browsing at the American Homebrew Association little app and noticed this brewery had a discount for members, so I went in there and claimed my discount, and my wife and I got some beers. Berliner-Weiss, yes. It was a I think it was Berliner-Weiss anyway, that they served it, straight up in a glass, or they served it with a variety of different syrups. One of the syrups was raspberry. One of the syrups was, I think, maybe a grape or something. But one of them was Sweet Woodruff, and I went, "Well, I've never had that," and it is a really interesting, fun flavor that I've not had since. But yeah, no, that one caught my eye. I tried growing it, like I said, and yeah, I had limited success, but it worked.
Okay.
I would probably try it again and hopefully have better success. Anyway, other ingredients, juniper. Very gin kind of forward flavor, but it's I think even without the heat treatment, you get a level of bitterness from juniper all by itself.
Yeah.
Especially in the, hell, throwing that into your primary, you'd probably get some interesting tannins off the skins of those berries too. Turmeric.
That one shocks me. Turmeric is distinctive.
It is.
I have never heard of turmeric, even in cooking, losing its bite. So I can't. I wonder how it would do it. It must be. I must either small quantities or something different happens in fermentation.
Like I said, these are all different recipes I found for people advertising gruits. They don't post their recipes. They just basically post an ingredient list, and they don't post a full ingredient list, just the stuff that is perceptible. So I'm kind of with you in that this probably showed up on a list of 3 to 5 other ingredients, some of which might have been the grain type, some of which might have been, other herbs, stuff like that. It might have even included hops, because some of them did still include hops, but it was one of those things of it's this is just the declared ingredients that you're probably going to taste. Any that you don't taste, probably not on that ingredient list. Another one that kind of just makes a lot of sense if you think about it, rosemary.
Yeah, rosemary, I can easily see doing them. Rosemary is one of those hardy plants that if you manage to kill it, I'm impressed.
I mean, you forget to water it for a week, that's on you, bud. But I mean, if you're putting any amount of effort into it, it grows pretty hardy, it grows pretty tall, and
Actually, I had a couple of strands I had run through 3 winters with complete negligence, completely exposed in the elements in a pot. It froze all the way around. Next morning, I said, "Okay, I'm back, but you're on notice, buddy."
Another one I really like the idea of, I'm sure it was not a historical thing, lemongrass.
Lemongrass is pretty mild overall flavor,
Right.
so
And
yeah.
I'm not sure you're getting a lot of bitterness out of some of these. These are just the ingredients that I've seen used in gruits. And I think
Okay.
the idea is that we're making a more herbaceous beer here than necessarily making a a beer that's bittered with things other than hops. I mean, in cases like that, it's probably one of those, well, we want to go back to that, the mugwort and the yarl and sorry, the yarrow and the horehound and things like that that are kind of the proven winners here. I think this is more of a chance to play with new ingredients and,
Fair enough.
not only balance the sweetness with some bitterness, but also add some interesting other flavors. So,
Well, no, it's not like we don't do that every time in mead making, so, right.
right. Another real common one I saw, sage.
Yeah, I can see
And
sage. It's a very earthy flavor.
yeah, it's earthy, a little woodsy, depending on, whether you're using like the little stems or if you're just getting the little bits off of it. And I'm willing to bet you could get a level of bitterness from it, but I know I've even had sage tea and it might have been a little bitter, but it was more like a
It was the support for everything else you were tasting.
right. It,
Yeah,
it's
I know
more
what
of
you're
a
talking about there.
like a woodsy kind of a
Yeah.
flavor than anything
I
else.
love
Or
the earthy, woodsy flavor of sage. I drink sage tea in the wintertime a lot.
Chamomile is one of those that again, it shows up. It's not something I would consider bitter. It's not even a particularly strong flavor,
No, it's
really.
both mild and every mild and not bitter. I mean, I've had, chamomile tea is used for sleep.
Yeah, it is a soft, gentle flavor, and I would think if you wanted to pronounce chamomile, you're going to take a fair amount to do that. Again, we've had chamomile tea; it's a pretty common thing. I don't consider chamomile tea all that bitter. It might have a little bit of a tannic load to it, but I don't see it as being a bittering agent. So that was an interesting one. But elderberries are kind of in that same idea as juniper, where that you could throw in some tannin, you could get some bitterness from them because if you're not sweetening the elderberry flavor, that can come off as very tart, and that can be a little bit perceptually bitter. Again, parts of the plant, when it's harvested, how it's harvested, things like that. It's very open there, I think. Lemon verbena is another one of those.
I use lemongrass, lemon verbena, things like that for insect repellent in my garden because the lemon stuff does that.
Yes.
So that's odd that you'd put it as a bitterant substitute.
Well, again, this is not necessarily a bitterant substitute kind of situation. This is maybe just adding extra flavors. These are listed ingredients for Gruitts that I've seen in the past 30 plus years now,
Okay.
from a bunch of different sources, kind of just poking around and doing my research on the internet. Rose hips.
Yeah, rose hips I can completely see.
Right. And again, I think rose hips, if you've ever had something with a pronounced rose hip flavor, that's an acidic flavor
Yeah,
more than
very
a
harsh.
bitter flavor.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting addition to things done in the right quantities.
Yeah.
Grains of paradise are, I could see getting a little bit of bitterness out of those. That's kind of a
That would let a lot of spicy notes into your drink at that point, because I've had greens of paradise and it's spicy like pepper with a different flavor type of thing.
Right, it has that kind of the same kind of I don't want to say burn, but kind of a tingle you get
Yeah.
from fresh black pepper. Along with a broader profile of different spicy notes to it.
Yeah.
It's a fun one to play with.
Fair
One
enough.
that I am sure is used for bitterness above and beyond everything else, wormwood.
Of course, wormwood. Yeah, I should have thought of that one, to be
Right. I'm
honest.
to be honest, I'm surprised it doesn't show up in more Gruit recipes as a like a common thing because I mean like absinthe, the
Yeah.
primary flavor of that is
Wormwood.
wormwood.
Yeah.
And if you've ever had absinthe, you know that's a bitter as hell drink.
Oh no, I've never had absinthe. No, not me. Yeah, well, it is bitter.
Kind of in that same absinthe milieu, if you will, star anise.
Star anise, one of my wife's favorite flavors.
And I could see that adding some bitterness. It's got a kind of a not quite minty, but a little bit more. Yeah, it's a fairly unique flavor. Another one that I found weird, cedar branches. They specifically listed cedar branches
Okay.
as opposed to like cedar tips.
Or bark or leaves.
Right.
That's interesting. Or,
So
yeah.
they're and if I
Branches.
remember right, the weird thing was they specified this was Missouri cedar branches.
I should say needles, not leaves, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well,
they're leaves.
Right. Different shape,
Yeah.
same part. Yeah, no, and the brewery was not in Missouri, which is why I was like, okay, well, why is it necessary to specify these were Missouri cedar branches, other than, for the sake of, I think it was somewhere like, it was not even a state away. It was like Wisconsin or maybe South Dakota. I made this list yesterday, so
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Caraway.
Caraway, I completely see. I completely can see that one. I mean, I would not have thought of it unless you said it, but yeah, that tracks.
Right. Clove was also mentioned.
Clove, yeah.
Clove totally makes sense. Here's one that I have questions about, and not a why, but what part? Dandelion.
Okay. My first knee-jerk reflex is leaves, because I've had dandelion salad and they are bitter.
Yes, and that makes sense, right? But I know in like roasted dandelion root is a common ingredient for a number of alcoholic beverages as well. I don't remember the one that goes with that, but it's there are parts of this country where like roasted dandelion root and roasted another kind of root minced up are added to some kind of an alcoholic beverage that I've forgotten off the top of my head too, and it's just a thing that's a regional specialty for them.
Wow. I mean, I get it. I mean, we use white oak or medium toasted oak or something for, aging for wines, beers, and meads. Missouri cedar branch. Maybe it's just has a different flavor. I don't. I got no clue.
It could be. And realistically, they might have chosen cedar branches for the, what do I want to say, like the surface area to ingredient kind of a thing. The same way, you get the little chips or the little cubes, you get a faster like pull of that flavor as opposed to using a stave or a barrel kind of an idea.
Fair enough.
Thyme. I love thyme.
I love thyme. That's awesome. I use it frequently in cooking.
I'm not sure it's a bittering agent. I'm
I'm pretty sure it's not, to be honest.
willing to bet it's not. I'm pretty sure you could make a nice tea from it.
I have. It's not better.
Yeah. But it's listed a number of times. One that I found fun and interesting and surprising, chaga mushrooms.
A mushroom as a bitterant.
Is it a bitterant? Is it a flavor thing? They don't specify, but chaga, if I'm not mistaken, I have to look this up. Chaga has kind of an earthy flavor to it.
Like sage.
Yeah.
Sage has no, so it could be.
So I'm more willing to bet it's more of a flavor enhancer than a bitter kind of ingredient, but I saw two or three people using chaga
But
mushrooms.
did they just use chaga for the bitter, quote unquote, bitter and grew it, or was there something else too?
There was other ingredients.
Okay, fair
Most of
enough.
these are not appearing by themselves.
Okay, I wanted to, 'cause I'm sitting here. If something, thyme and chaga mushrooms, if they're not bitterants and they're just flavors, how are you bittering it? Was my question.
And the last one I saw, which should it's not the part we would normally think of for using, but oak bark was also mentioned.
Oak bark. No, I. Okay.
I think the I'm not sure if the like the staves and the or chips or cubes or whatever the hell we're using come from like the heartwood or the softwood from an oak, but generally I think of those as coming from like the part you make lumber from, right? Not the bark.
That's part. What kills me about some of these things is, as humans, we are so. What would happen if we did fill in the blank? And that's why we get lists like this.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that's why most of the culinary things we have now, we know that we can eat. I mean, for example, saffron, you can only eat the stamens in the middle. The ones, the spice that you actually pluck out of the flower
Right.
is the only edible part of the flower. How many times did people say, "Oh God, no," and then find out, "Oh, this is a good part."
Yeah, and I think, oh God, it grows as a weed up here, and I have a ton of it in my backyard. I think it's pokeweed.
Yeah, pokeweed.
Has like really, really bright, like kind of reddish purplish
Berries, yeah.
berries and a really great droop of them. They look beautiful. They are apparently like not poisonous toxic, but toxic enough to really upset your stomach if you eat them raw.
Yeah.
And if you get enough of them, you're probably going to do some damage.
Okay, and I'm glad you brought that up, because this last week, in my dives into looking at things to talk about, there was pokeweed meads that I came across. I wasn't looking for that specifically, but yeah, I came across. They're sitting here, be careful, because if you do this, if you don't get this fermented properly, or you don't cook it down first, and I'm sitting here, Dude.
Well, and I think elderberries are kind of in that same way of like, you can upset your stomach a little bit just eating them raw. Part of the process of either cooking them or fermenting them tends to calm that down.
Well, that's,
So,
yeah.
but yeah, no, and apparently cooking pokeweed is a totally, viable thing that like a number of African American communities have just. Yeah, no. Grandma used to make pokeweed jellies and stuff, or used a pokeweed sauce on something or other. Like I forget the exact context of it, but I've seen people talk about, yeah, no, this is regarded as a weed, this is regarded as toxic, but if you treat it right, you can do good stuff with this.
Ingenuity. Yeah. I mean, but you know, after reading about, I'll be honest, reading about the pokeweed, I'm sitting here, it's been tickling the back of my brain a little bit now.
Yeah.
But, how often does that not happen?
It's a curse we bear some of these
Yes,
days. It
sometimes, man.
really is. So,
Okay, so how do we incorporate into meat?
let's talk about beer first. If
Okay.
we're making a gruit, there are a number of steps to making a beer.
Yeah.
So,
You walked me through it when you made that first batch when you first
right.
started. Yeah.
So we start with like a what they call a mash, which is basically it's warm enough that it's activating those enzymes that are they're native on the barley that will break down the starchy stuff into like glucose and fructose and stuff like that.
Oh, the
That's
sugar stuff, yeah.
sucrose. Oh yeah, that the yeast can actually that it can actually like digest and turn into alcohol, which is what we want. The second phase is what they call sparging, where you take hotter water, or you just heat the water that you're brewing with more often than not, and kind of run it over those grains
To
as,
wash it off.
yeah, it's like a rinse,
Yeah.
trying to get those broken down sugars off,
Yeah.
rinsed and
As
like
much as you can. Yeah.
into the liquid itself. And then there's a boil, usually, and that's where we would incorporate hops or grain
Or
or
grit.
The bittering stuff, the
Yeah.
gruit mix in this case. Now, usually when we're doing a beer, we're talking about doing a 60-minute boil. And I've seen like articles from Brewlosophy, it's a
Yeah, I've heard of
website
it.
and YouTube stuff like that, where they've argued that you can totally get away with just doing a 30-minute boil. And in this case, we probably could, because I'm thinking, if we're putting mugwort or yarrow or something bitter,
Turmeric.
right, into our beer here, does it need to steep for a whole hour? Probably not. We're probably going to get the level of flavor we're looking for 15, 20 minutes tops, if not 10.
That's, well, these are herbs. Herbs, by their very nature and use, break and imbue the flavor fast.
Well, and the other thing to think about is that the part of the reason that hops work the way they work is not because they are necessarily imbuing flavor so much as the things that they are imbuing break down according to heat, and so that takes some time. The active ingredient in hops, the ingredient we really care about as far as bittering goes, is called an alpha acid, and when we're boiling it, the heat is taking the proteins involved in that acid and folding them and changing them, and that makes it bitter.
Okay.
So,
I hate saying this, but how does honey and meat come into this point?
well, we'll get to that in a second because this is what I think
I'm very
where.
excited about this part.
Chill.
Okay, sorry.
Calm down. Now,
In control.
when we're making a beer, I think really we can leave off the 60-minute part of the hop bill substitution, so to speak. Unless you're using something like bark, then I could see, that might take a little while longer to steep, right? But for the most part, I think most of these guys, we can add in the 15-minute mark where you would do like aroma hops in a beer, or at flame out. Basically, when the boil is done, you just add the herbs and then you cool everything down, get it into the fermenter, and probably filter at that point too. They probably, as long as it takes for you to actually cool from boil to the 70 or 80 degrees you're going to pitch your yeast at, that's probably all the more steeping you really need for a lot of these.
Fair enough.
So that's how I would approach it. Now, for making a mead, we have a couple different questions here. If we're going to make a gruit braggot, obviously we need to start with a beer. So at this point, when we've got it at flame out or pretty close to pitching temperature,
Yeah.
that's where I would add the honey and then make everything kind of a braggot style at that point.
Nice. Okay.
If we're just going to make a mead, using these kind of gruet herbs, make a methylene that way. I would probably start with my must water before I add the honey and just kind of steep it on the stove. You could choose between like a simmer to a rolling boil. And honestly, I would say if you're looking to dial in the amount of a particular flavor you're looking for or a combination of flavors, probably a great approach to this is just making tea with it.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, that's how I did my Earl Grey mead. Yeah.
right. You just figure up, okay, in this much, let's say, you measure 500 milliliters for the sake of a nice round number, and you put that in a teacup with 10 grams of dandelion root.
With a big teacup, yes.
And then let that steep for a little bit. You can dial in the amount to the water, add more or less as you see fit. You can dial in, whether this is going to be like a simmer or a rolling boil. You can dial in, the amount of time it's going to be steeped and figure out your flavors that way in a much smaller scale than even a little 1 gallon batch, right?
Okay.
And then I would just start with scale that up to,
Whatever you got.
right. Are you doing a gallon? Are you doing 3 gallons? Are you doing, 10 gallons? Scale that up and make that tea that you settled on at that size. Add your honey as it's cooling down, and pitch, Bob's your uncle, right?
Okay. So nice. I mean, I want to do this with you just because I can't drink beer without erroneous effects. I want to try something I can drink and see how much I'd appreciate
Right. And I think, are we going to get something that tastes like a modern beer using herbs instead of
No.
hops? Probably not.
No.
Are we going to get close enough that it's something that I could say, yeah, this is beer enough that I can enjoy this? And you could go, oh, this is what beer is like for people that, don't have a violent reaction to it like
Yeah.
I do.
Don't have a very unfortunate reaction. Yeah.
And so, I think we could even keep this pretty simple. We don't need to do like a big malt bill. We could probably do like some liquid or dry malt extract to get the beer part of this. We could probably do some, a nice lighter, like an orange blossom honey,
Ooh.
and some, a little two or three fun herbs, kind of between your garden and my box of stuff from Mountain Rose from a while back, kind of
Yeah.
like play around with it and see what we come up with.
That would be a kind of fun, actually. I've seen
Yeah,
the
no, and I'm pretty sure I bought a number of those in the same idea of historical ways to make mead and beer. Yes.
Yes.
So I'm relatively certain there is both mugwort and yarrow in there, for example.
Okay,
So
so.
we have some options. We have some possibilities here, and I think this is just a development, and I think at this point we've been talking about this in very like broad general terms for quite a while. I don't want to like spend another half hour talking about ideas and options and stuff here on the
What, you
pod.
tired?
I'm for those of you listening at home and doing other things, whether that's driving to work or washing the dishes or folding the laundry. I'm sure another half hour isn't going to hurt, and you've probably got other tasks to do. But we
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
about an hour,
Yeah,
right?
I don't recall ever getting tired of talking. And I don't think you either.
I've definitely been tired of talking, especially in like large group settings. But you know me, I'm.
Yeah, you're so quiet and reserved, yes.
My wife says that since I started working from home, I've gone borderline feral with my introvertedness. So,
Okay, well, that's fair. That's fair. I don't have that problem.
but anyway, that's the long and short of it. And I think we've done just the real simple stuff we laid out there. If we wanted to make this a beer, and use like an actual brewing process, I think it'd be fun to just go like a real simple, grain bill, something light, like. We could do kind of a Golden Promise, which this means
I don't know
nothing
what a
to you.
golden promise is.
Golden Promise is a variety of barley.
Okay.
It is, I've there was a trend in brewing number of years back called smash beers. Smash beer stands for single malt, single hop.
Okay.
And Golden Promise was one of these that was used a lot because it is a base malt, like a pilsner or a pale malt. In that it's providing the bulk of your your sugars to be fermented into alcohol. But at the same time, it also has a really round, interesting profile of different other flavors that add into it. So I think basically taking a page out of that and just, you know, let's get 7 to 10 pounds of Golden Promise. We'll do the proper brew part if we're going to do that, as opposed to, you know, using an extract. Not that there's anything wrong with using an extract.
Yeah.
If it's your level of commitment here. But yeah, we'll just throw that together with some light honey and some herbs, and we'll see what we come up with.
Yeah, I mean, is on your comment about using extracts or not, I've seen extracts and additives win competitions just as readily as pure fruits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's what you want to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I know a number of mead makers that straight up use the box wine kits and win award after award for their pints doing that. So, no shame.
No, I mean, we're not here to make you feel bad about doing one thing or the other, because there's no wrong way to do this as long as you get what you like what you get.
It's how much control do you want over this process? And I could imagine there are some people that want so much control that they have a patch of barley in their backyard and are building a flour mill. I'm just not into it that
way. I just can't do that, because I mean,
barley, I imagine, takes up a lot of space.
Have you met my family? But anyway, so yeah, so that we that, so that's a grid. Okay, well, my ability to drink beer is not a forlorn and abject impossibility, apparently.
No, and well, is it the same as a award-winning microbrew from such and such brewery? No. Is it the same as drinking a macro brew from Anheuser-Busch or Miller or whatever? No, but is it something that's pretty damn close that you can enjoy? Yeah,
maybe. Hopefully. Yeah, sure.
Worth a try.
Well, anyway, so Jeff, great to be here.
Yeah,
we can wrap this up, because that's a lot to take in. I'll be blunt, because that there's some of those things there that I would never thought of as a additive in any way.
Yeah, no, a lot of those I think are a lot of those were added and included in the list, not for the sake of oh yeah, this is a bittering agent you can substitute instead of hops. This is interesting things that people thought to add to it. And I think that's just, it's again, it's reinforcing this idea that there is so much we could be doing, so much we can do. And the perennial problem, of course, is add more ideas to the list.
Yeah,
why not? So much faster than we can knock them off the list and say, was it good?
Do I need to repeat it? It takes me 6 months to bottle a batch. Let's put 400,000 more things on my list. What a great idea.
At this point, we're adding two or three an episode, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, we are. But guys, have a great day. I'm really glad you came here to join us. Enjoy yourselves and happy meeting.
Yeah, for those of you guys missing the braggart content on the Mead House, as my previous host and I were so frequently talking about, the last couple of episodes have probably been a treat. Anyway,
have a great day. Good night.